The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Now more than ever, Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price, you want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's, we help, you save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at Lowe's.com/lowest price guarantee.
Welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm Charlie Sykes. The morning after the President's State of the Union address, I have to admit I've always been a skeptic about big speeches, particularly any time you hear the punditocracy say, oh, this is a pivotal speech. You know, this president or this candidate has to reset with this speech. By the time you get to the speech, it's probably too late. Plus, I think we put a little bit too much weight on speeches. So, spoiler alert here, Joe Biden did not reset his presidency. There was not some dramatic pivot, but it was a solid moment, I thought, at a crucial moment in history. And we are lucky enough to be joined the morning after by Michael Steele, the former RNC chairman and a political analyst for MSNBC. So good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Hey, good morning, Charlie. It's great to be with you. And I can't think of anyone better to have this conversation with than you, man. I'm looking forward to this.
Well, thank you. And by the way, I'm actually broadcasting today, not from Wisconsin, but from your home state of Maryland. I am in Southern Maryland right now.
Oh, nice.
So nice. We're just mixing it up. I figured if I'm going to be talking to Michael Steele, the former lieutenant governor of Maryland, I should come to Maryland.
Well, dude, I'm glad you're in my backyard, man. That's great. That's great. You make sure you sneak yourself a little crab cake before you get back on the road now.
There is no way that I will avoid crab cake here in Maryland. Okay, so we'll talk a little Maryland politics a little bit later, but let's talk about the president's speech last night. Let's start with, I thought the strongest, most consequential part of the speech was when he addressed what was happening in Ukraine right now and the miscalculation by Vladimir Putin. Let's play that.
6 days ago, Russia's Vladimir Putin sought to shake the very foundations of the free world, thinking he could make it bend to his menacing ways. But he badly miscalculated. He thought he could roll into Ukraine and the world would roll over. Instead, he met with a wall of strength he never anticipated or imagined. He met the Ukrainian people.
So give me your thoughts on this. And again, we're at a moment where I think there's reason for hope, but also we wake up to the headlines about the Russians on the march surrounding major cities. We have a fog of disinformation, but give me your take on the way that Joe Biden has handled this so far.
I think the president has handled this brilliantly, and I think that was one of the first quotes I wrote down. The first one was, freedom will always triumph over tyranny, and he set the tone right out of the box, the opening of his speech, and he clarified, I think, what a lot of people have been witnessing over the last 7 or 8 days in Ukraine, that the Ukrainian people, led by President Zelensky, are a formidable force. And no matter what you thought your calculation was, that this is a unique moment in history that we're all witnessing at the same time. So I thought that line, Putin met a wall of strength he never imagined, he met the Ukrainian people, is the slogan for what we've seen right now. It really encapsulates it. I think in terms of how the president leading up to that moment has led has been phenomenal. The ability to go and stitch back together the tattered remnants of the NATO alliance, torn apart by Donald Trump. Let us be clear about that. There's no fancy footing or big words you can come up with to, you know, give Trump cover here. If Donald Trump were sitting in the Oval Office right now, we would be in a hotter mess and closer to war than I think you would ever imagine, simply because our NATO allies would be moving in a direction without us. It would align us with Putin, and we'd be a hot mess. But what Biden did was he brought clarity to the alliance, and he reaffirmed not just the Article 5 principles that one for all and all for one, but that this alliance, even 80 years later, still matters. It's still important. And I think he's done a great job reasserting that. And for him, the challenge, as you know, Charlie, has been navigating that narrative up against the domestic narrative. And so that's what that speech tried to do last night. And I think he did it somewhat successfully.
I think, you know, we've gotten used to this whole notion that somehow Trump would have been tougher or would have deterred this.
Oh, please.
I still have a lot of problems with John Bolton, you know, and the fact uh-huh. that he didn't testify and that he wrote the fucking book and everything. But he had a couple of interesting moments when he went on Newsmax yesterday and the guy's talking about how, you know, a great job Trump did. And Bolton just sits there with the mustache and says, Donald Trump didn't even know where Ukraine was on a map.
That was a good, great moment.
It was. But is there anything that Joe Biden could have done to deter this? You know, he's rallied the world now. He's taken as forceful a position as, I mean, actually, in many ways, NATO's taken a much more forceful position than anybody expected. But is there anything in retrospect that he could have done to change Vladimir Putin's calculation that this was a good idea to roll
no,
in Ukraine?
No. People, please stop thinking that.
Yeah.
How do you disabuse a madman from being a madman? Putin has delusions of reestablishing the Soviet empire. This is the man who, since the fall of the wall and the end of the Cold War, has been stewing in his own funk over the collapse of the Soviet Union and the half-handed threats about, you know, using nuclear missiles against the U.S. or anyone else who dares to challenge him, this outright hegemonic view of world domination, and we don't want NATO on our border, and so we want to cleave back Ukraine and Lithuania and so forth, those former satellites of Eastern Europe, you know, part of the Russian Empire in Eastern Europe. So he's living in a whole world. This is old KGB. So you can't disabuse him of this notion. So what would he have done? I mean, you can tell it, look, if you do something, I mean, how many children we know have been told, hey, if you do this, you're going to get a spanking. And they do it anyway because they just don't believe that they're invulnerable. They're vulnerable to those types of threats. So, you know, it's what you do once the actor exposes their hand. And what you see now, Charlie, is Putin desperate on two fronts. One, desperate because the Ukrainian people have basically flipped him the biggest bird you could ever flip an empire like the Soviet Union. And I refer to them that way because that's how they're behaving. Yeah. And two, the unification of the NATO alliance, the European alliance, to the point that the one thing no one thought that everyone would agree to do, and that is to apply the SWIFT sanction.
Yeah, that was.
They're like, no, let's do that. And so he's come up against something that he thought wouldn't happen. And I think that's because when you go back and you look at the 4 years of Donald Trump, he had a puppet in the White House who would do the internal breaking down of the alliance and be the mouthpiece, as we've seen Republicans be during this horrific period. And that's not there. And he is up against a wall. And so now look for him to be more desperate in his rhetoric, more desperate in his actions. And the alliance has to be prepared for that going forward.
I think you're right on all of those counts. Look, I do think that the Biden administration has handled this much better than in Afghanistan. You know,
yes,
after Trump, our alliances were really in disarray and didn't have any credibility. I mean, the alliance did not have credibility, and he has methodically put them together. And he's done it in a very distinctive way. I think people are going to be writing about this for some time, allowing the Europeans to take the lead on this.
Yes.
It's one of those examples, like, it's amazing what you can accomplish if you don't care who gets the credit. Mm-hmm. But having said this, I want to just go back to the calculation that Vladimir Putin made, because it is such a dramatic miscalculation. But what did the world look like through his eyes when he was making the decision? And as you point out, he had a lot of reasons to believe that the United States was weak and divided, that our alliance was weak and divided. He'd gone through 4 years of Donald Trump. Let's be honest about it. The Obama administration had let him take Crimea with few consequences whatsoever. And of course, he had had 4 years of beyond appeasement. I don't know what would be like slightly north of appeasement other than simply, you know, toe kissing. And then you have, you know, the Biden presidency with both Donald Trump and the entire Republican Party, well, not the entire Republican Party, but the loudest voices of the Republican Party, questioning whether or not he was a legitimate president. You know, we talk about weakness invites disaster, and yet the right was incredibly invested in making this president as weak as possible and not caring about the consequences. But when you have a country, you know, Vladimir Putin is looking, he's paying attention. He saw what happened on January 6th. He sees all the voices saying that Joe Biden's not a real president. The Republican GOP has been tweeting out, you know, what a failed president, failed president, failed president. And what a surprise that Vladimir Putin would have thought, okay, I have a very, very weak president. I have a former president who is a wholly owned subsidiary who may become president again. And NATO has proven to be a weak tit over and over. And so he made that calculation. And as it turns out, it was a grotesque miscalculation on his part. But you can see why he would have thought that he would get away with it.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of telltale signs that support everything you've just described in how Putin would look at the U.S. and the European confab, Germany, Italy, you know, Great Britain, as not coordinated enough or tight enough to really stop him. That for either reasons of energy, oil, cash, business deals and transactions, or just the geopolitics of the U.S. is over there and we're over here, there would be certain built-in advantages by Putin's calculation that would assist him. And he'd have good reason to think that, particularly given the very weak, tepid response of the Obama administration to the wholesale annexation of Crimea. And so that, as the backdrop, motivates the actions today. I think, though, what Putin has probably realized is that union between the members of NATO, the European Union, which are now poised to admit Ukraine and so forth, that, yeah, they're frayed, and there are moments where they were locking jaw and locking heads, but they're largely going to stay united. And I think part of that miscalculation comes from the fact that he has no one to talk to.
Yeah, right.
His circle has gotten smaller and smaller. When you look at those who study Russian and who study Putin and know Putin, they will tell you that that inner circle of his has gotten smaller and smaller. When you look at the dressing down of, you know, their equivalent to the CIA director, you know, in a very public way, the physical distance between him and his cabinet and his generals when they're in the room with him, talking to him, is symbolic of that distance between him and folks who are probably advising him, dude, you really don't want to do this. And the Russian people, another third factor here that no one's really kind of focused in on. There's one thing about when happens when you open the world up, when you open yourself up to the world, no matter how much of a totalitarian state you are, when the people get a taste of what it's like out there in the real world, in the broader world, they tend to be a little bit more responsive and certainly more, you know, scrutinize more the behavior of leaders at home. And that's what you see, a million people protesting, over 6,000 people arrested just in these last few days for protesting. That's going to have reverberations as well up against Putin. So when you're looking at calculations, Charlie, There's no good calculation for Vladimir Putin when it comes to his actions in Ukraine. And while the battle may be painful and difficult, I think in the end, the Ukrainian people are going to show the world how to win here. And it could wind up doing more damage to that great dream that Putin has than anything else.
Well, see, I hope you're right, but we don't know how this ends right now.
We don't know.
And the incredible inspiration we're seeing out of Ukraine. But, you know, on the podcast yesterday, we're talking about Clint Watts, who said, listen, we need to be prepared for what happens if the full weight of the Russian military comes down on Kyiv and the other cities, and we are watching, you know, something that happened, you know, like in Chechnya.
Can I ask you something on that, Charlie? What do you think? I mean, think about this. You've watched the president of this country, a former comedian, a guy that everyone saw as a lightweight, right? Question his ability to be president, let alone run the country. Standing there in a flak jacket and a helmet, leading his people, leading grandmothers into battle, right? What do you think happens if the full weight, as you put it, of the Russian army comes down on a Russian army, by the way, that are, soldiers are deliberately puncturing their own gas tanks in their tanks so they run out of gas because they think this is wrong and don't want to move on their fellow Slavs. What do you think happens globally at that point?
That's the big question, is does the world sit by and watch as Kyiv is surrounded and strangled and bombed into oblivion? What happens if Zelensky is martyred? We still have the inspiration, but I think we need to be prepared that, in fact, this will end as ugly as Vladimir Putin wants it to end. Now, maybe, you know, we're right. Maybe these columns will fall apart. Maybe there was something will happen. But at this point, we don't know. And we're in this strange position, a strange moment in history where the entire world is amazingly united against this, but the Ukrainians on the ground are on their own. It's a strange moment. We're all saying never again, never again. And yet right now in Kyiv, what happens when they shut off the power? What happens when they start bombing residential buildings? What happens when we see the kind of savage brutality that we've seen in Chechnya? Look, the only off-ramp that I can see is if the Russians themselves have had enough of this. If the oligarchs go, okay, you know, we supported you because we thought you were good for business, that you were good for stability. Right. And you're, number one, destroying our economy. Number two, you've turned us into a pariah nation. Number three, we are watching this absolute horror from people who are like us, that these are our fellow Russians, and that there's something, but I don't know. And at this point, this is part of the problem because we are in deep in fogs within fogs.
That's a good way to put it, fog within fog. And I think I appreciate your assessment very much. And it is the big question that hangs over that fog is how does it clear itself? Do the Europeans decide when, as you put it, the power is shut off and the bombs begin to fall? Do they then step up as individual nations, not so much as NATO, because NATO creates a different obligation for the United States. But if Great Britain or Germany or some other nation wants to go in and stand with Ukraine in that fight, they probably could. And that, again, becomes a question. I think my gut tells me that these nations will come together in a way and will figure out a way to kiss up to the brink of world war without actually dipping so much into it. I think that the backdoor channeling of pressure on Putin has already begun. I would almost guarantee you certain oligarchs in from London to New York to Paris to Buenos Aires are in conversation and being told, dude, you know, this is going to get a lot harder for you.
Yeah, we're going to take your yachts and sink them, you know. Okay, now it gets real. It's real when you go after the yachts.
It gets real fast, right? And, you know, I see that happening where Putin is almost isolated internally.
That's the best case scenario. And by the way, I have always been kind of a sanctions skeptic a little bit that would really make a difference. And I was very, very skeptical that the United States and Europe would take all of the steps that were necessary. In fact, I think they've surprised themselves. Because, yeah, I mean, as of last week, they were doing really, really serious sanctions, with the exception of the energy sector, because we're not going to touch the end. It's like, what the hell?
Right.
Seriously. I mean, Russia is the gas station with nukes, and as long as the gas station operates, he's going to be fine. And yet within 48 hours, it was like, no, you know, no, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. We're going to do SWIFT. We're going to shut down this bank. We're going to go after this oligarch. You're seeing the oil companies themselves say, yeah, we don't want to do any business with them. It is really been a remarkable 4 days to just watch the world kind of turn on its axes, but also in ways that have to surprise themselves. I mean, the Swiss have got to be going, we have been neutral forever, and we're in on this. No, the Swiss?
Here's the rub, Charlie. So if I'm Germany or Great Britain, and I'm sitting there going, all right, we got ourselves all tangled up with these Russian pipelines, getting such a significant portion of our energy demands met by Russia. Do you think there's a reevaluation there of that and figuring out other ways? Because the last thing you want to be is beholden to a power that feels it will use that as leverage against you in order to take over the world.
So I have a question for you, since you raised this issue of energy. What is the mental block that so many people have to what I think is the answer lying in plain sight, which is nuclear energy? What is the
block? I don't know, dude. I'm with you. I mean, all these questions could be answered very quickly with two words: nuclear power. I don't get it. It's right there. And you have incredible examples of not just the efficiency and the economy, but the safety of nuclear power by countries that are already utilizing that as a portion of their energy grid. I don't get it. I don't know why we look. Okay, Chernobyl, I get. Well, that's because the Russians didn't give a crap about safety and protocols and so forth. The French have not had that problem. So, you know, there for me is a wide open field of opportunity. I don't understand it. I've been an advocate of that of source of power since the 1980s, and still it boggles my mind that we're not there.
Okay, so I want to switch gears. I want to talk about a little bit of domestic politics, including some of the things the president said last night. But let's do this right after this. Here's something you should pay attention to. Homeowners who have not yet taken advantage of today's low interest rates are overpaying for their mortgage. Make sure that's not you. It just takes a 10-minute call to my friends at American Financing, America's home for home loans, where you'll get a free no-obligation mortgage review from a salary-based mortgage consultant. So there's no pressure. And you're not paying any upfront or hidden fees. You're just learning about the different ways that you can save up to $1,000 a month. That's right, a month. Think of what you can do with that kind of money, the kind of difference it can make to your budget. So make the call to American Financing to learn more, and do it now before rates rise. You could end up skipping up to 2 payments and may close in as fast as 10 days. So call 888-991-9788. That's 888-991-9788. Or visit AmericanFinancing.net/thrill. NMLS 182334, NMLS consumeraccess.org. Okay, we are back with Michael Steele. There have been many of us who have been urging President Biden to pivot back toward the center, to remember how he got elected back in 2020 by appealing to centrist swing voters, and also to very clearly acknowledge that there are certain things that have been pushed by the progressive left that turned out to be toxic. And President Biden very clearly took some of that advice last night. This is what he had to say about defunding the police.
The answer is not to defund the police. It's to fund the police. Fund them. Fund them.
Great.
Fund them with resources and training. Yes. Resources and training they need to protect our communities. I ask Democrats and Republicans alike, to pass my budget and keep our neighborhoods safe.
Okay, so Michael, he emphasized that in case you didn't hear it the first three times, fund the police. So your thoughts?
Yeah, no, smart move. Reset the narrative on the thing that was the Achilles heel for Democrats in the 2020 cycle. The narrow seat that they have in the House is because of that narrative that had emerged at the end of the campaign. The Republican response by the governor of Iowa, mm-hmm. Governor Reynolds, you know, tried to play up all Democrats are for defund the police. I mean, so, you know, they wanted to really hit that talking point. But I think Biden is starting to figure out how to the point that you made, pivot back towards where the strength of the opportunity to win lies. And that is in the center left, center right of the country, particularly among independent voters, who responded very well to that and who will respond very well to that narrative. As crime is more and more an issue in not just in our cities, but in our suburbs around the country, they're looking for, okay, what's your solution? So if you're going to reinforce the ability of the police to protect and defend and serve, then great. The narrative that you have from some on the far left, it's just not resonating. And so Biden last night, I thought, made that attempt to pull the reins back and to reorient that donkey in a different direction.
Well, I thought it was interesting that clearly they told him, and you have to emphasize this. You right. really have to emphasize, because he's repeating it again and again and again. And of course, there are some Democrats who don't get it. Cori Bush, Congresswoman Cori Bush, tweeted out that, no, we still need to defund the police, because in case Republicans didn't have their talking point, she wanted to make sure that they had it there. What did you make of the fact that there were Democratic responses to a Democratic president? I'm pretty sure I'm not old enough to remember this ever happening before.
Well, but we had Republican responses to a Republican president. This is now the new thing. My view, to be honest with you, Charlie, is that we should eliminate this whole response to the State of the Union business in the first place. Okay. Because the reality of it is, no one gives a damn what your response is.
Seriously, first off, no one does.
You're disadvantaged by the virtue of the fact that you're not going to top standing in the chamber of the United States Congress and giving a speech. I don't care if you're standing in your Capitol chamber or out front of your state capitol, whatever. It doesn't work. Secondly, The emphasis and the focus is on what the president's agenda is. And that's what the State of the Union is. It takes an assessment of, okay, where we are, and then where I'd like to go. And I'm sorry, your political opponents just don't have the bandwidth to meet that in that particular moment. So for me, that's all a lot more noise than it's worth. The fact that progressives have decided, given that there's only a 5-seat majority in the House, they're likely to get their asses handed to them in spades in November, still pressing an agenda that, without a doubt, Charlie, the American people don't want. It was not a priority for them in the 2020 cycle. It was not a mandate from them by virtue of the margins that they did get. And to be that deaf, dumb, and blind to what the American people want makes it harder for Joe Biden to be Joe Biden and to, like I said, pull the reins back on that donkey and reorient his steps. It steps in a different direction. So they can go out here and talk about defunding the police and wanting to spend money on programs that people don't think have any value to them at this moment. Doesn't mean they don't have value at all, but at this moment, that's not a priority for them. Their priority is, I'm paying 75 cents more for a loaf of bread. I'm paying $1.25 more for a gallon of gas. You know, the electric bill is going up. That's their priority. And so you need to address that in order to bring those voters off the ledge of jumping back in bed with Republicans in November, which I'm telling you, Charlie, this time next year, with Kevin McCarthy, who won't be Speaker of the House, but thinks he will. But let's go ahead and use him just for the shits and giggles of it. If Kevin McCarthy in the House and Mitch McConnell in the Senate, what the hell do these Democrats think is going to happen to the Biden agenda? Where do they think things go from there? And God forbid there's another opening on the Supreme Court.
So let's flip this around and talk about from the Republican point of view. By the way, I agree with you. It does seem there are some Republicans who are sort of realizing, okay, the winds are at our back. We are going to win this election. But the one thing that could screw us up is the crazy. The crazy might, the overplaying. So Kevin McCarthy, you know, says Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gosar are unacceptable. Now, then he turns around and accepts them. But at least he's making those noises. Also, what do you make of the fact that Mitch McConnell takes Senator Rick Scott from Florida out, you know, behind the shed and leaves him there? just slaps him upside the head and says, you know, hey, your big 11-point plan, screw that. That's just a terrible idea. So there does seem to be at least like some recognition that, hey, guys, maybe this would be a good time to dial down the crazy and the stupid just for a moment.
Well, the problem is that out of 33 primaries last night in Texas and elsewhere that started the primary season, all the Donald Trump-endorsed candidates won.
Yeah. What a surprise.
So what do you think your general election is going to look like? McConnell is aware of that. He knows that there are some huge landmines ahead of them, namely coming out of the Supreme Court. I mean, okay, so everybody's talking about, oh, yes, the Democratic base is depressed. How depressed do you think they're going to be come June 30th? When the decision comes down that overturns Roe versus Wade or waters it down to the point very much like we've seen with the Voting Rights Act, where it doesn't mean anything. So McConnell is acutely aware that this 11-point plan that Rick Scott put out there is a load of crap. McConnell doesn't want to run on that, which is why McConnell, when asked about what is your agenda, said, I don't know. We'll just have to wait and see, because McConnell knows he's not going to open up any doors that are going to put them in a room full of bombs. This is not how he operates. So his problem is going to be bumping up against the ambition of Kevin McCarthy, right? Dealing with the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Gosars out of the House, and now having sort of the crazy wing emerge among some senators who are backing this, you know, agenda that is the most whacked out thing since whacked out things.
Oh, speaking of which, I'm going to need to talk about Wisconsin here since we're talking about whacked out things.
So. Yeah, you guys, I don't know what the hell y'all are doing in Wisconsin, baby. Where's the former chairman of Wisconsin? I would think that he'd be really quiet on all things Wisconsin politics.
It is amazing. Okay, so I want to do a little bit of a lightning round, but I want to tell people about something first. We'll do this on the other side. So do you ever listen to a Bulwark podcast but wish you could also weigh in with your comments or your questions? Join us for Thursday Night Bulwark every Thursday at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Join a rotating cast of Bulwarkers on Zoom to talk about the day's news or go deeper on topics that don't get their due in the fast-paced news cycle. Political news today is a lot of things, but it is not boring. And our team is here to help you make sense of it all. Thursday Night Bulwark is only available to Bulwark Plus subscribers. So join us at plus.thebulwark.com. Okay, so Michael Steele has promised that we have to talk about Wisconsin. You know, I have to tell you how weird this is, and people beat me up. Feel free to do it. There was once a time when I had the illusion that Wisconsin was kind of this bastion of sanity. Remember, you know, it was Paul Ryan was there, and, you know, and Reince Priebus was the chairman and everything. And the batshit crazy quotient right now is just off the charts. We have this former Supreme Court justice who was appointed by the Speaker of the Assembly to conduct this sham investigation. And understand that the Speaker of the State Assembly started this investigation because he just wanted to like make it go away. He figured like throw some red meat to the crazies. And unfortunately, his own investigation has metastasized into the crazy.
Right.
And I'm sorry to tell you that I know all these guys.
I know you do.
No, including the Supreme Court justice. And he testifies that you know, yesterday, yeah, maybe we ought to think about decertifying our electoral votes. Well, you know, and all the Republicans going, oh, fuck me. No, you can't do that. That's illegal. That's unconstitutional. It's God's, you know, it's gobsmackingly stupid. And you actually have a candidate for governor who is pushing the same thing. So it's like the crazy is making the crazy crazier. And then there's you know, the orange one from Mar-a-Lago whipping them on, saying this is great. It's so embarrassing. You know, Philip Bump from the Washington Post tweeted out, he looked at this report, or, you know, the big report that's cost taxpayers like $700,000,
right.
You know, put together by this former Supreme Court justice. I used to actually talk to him. And if people actually knew the kind of things that would, I mean, let's just say that I had phone conversations where he was describing pending litigation, where he used words that literally no other human being has used. And I mean this in the vulgar sense. And I have heard a lot. Okay. So think about the worst words out there. Okay. Anyway, so. And Philip Bump says, this thing is so incredibly stupid. It's just stupid. I can't even believe this guy was ever a justice. And I'm, you know, feel like, Philip, you have no idea.
I mean, you have no idea.
Okay, so lightning round, your reaction to Supreme Court nomination, Ketanji Brown Jackson.
I am looking forward to her public presentation and hearing. I think people will see her to be eminently qualified and focused, dedicated. Again, this is a woman who has already gone through the appointment process to get to the bench she's currently serving with the support of Republicans.
Right.
So all of this BS out there from Republicans, what was it? I believe it was the RNC put out a statement yesterday, tweeted out during the speech when, you know, the president referenced her, that she was wholly unqualified to sit on the bench. I'm like,
really?
Do you have any idea the people that Donald Trump had put on the bench who never even sat on a bench, heard a trial? He made them federal judges. So I think she's going to be incredible. I think just to my own personal perspective on this, I am, as an American, offended by some of the rhetoric that has already come out. As an African-American, I am pissed at this bullshit notion that this woman who has street cred on top of street cred, that the only thing that's disqualifying to certain white folk is the color of her skin. And they hide behind the words of Dr. King. So y'all just need to shut the hell up about Dr. King, please. Because you, A, don't understand what King said about that whole thing about the color of skin versus content of character. Y'all don't get what he meant there. Because if you listen to the rest of what he said, you'd understand what the context of that was. So just please, it matters. So I'm just really looking forward to her getting on the bench. It just saddens me that people are now looking at this highly qualified woman through this lens. And it's not because Joe Biden said that I wanted to elevate a black woman to the bench. That is no different than Ronald Reagan saying, I want to elevate a white woman to the bench. Or Donald Trump saying, I want to elevate the list of white men you just gave me to the bench. So I just look forward to her proving the point that America, at the end of the day, can be greater than its people.
Okay.
Or at least some of its people.
Since I'm in Maryland and you're a Maryland guy,
yeah.
Governor of Maryland, Larry Hogan, sounds like he's running for president. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he...
As a conservative Republican, an anti-Trump conservative Republican.
Right. I think Larry is a model of Republicanism that is long overdue. We want it back. We want to emphasize that. I think he'll have some challenges in that primary, obviously.
You think?
Yeah, just a few, just a little bit. But look, you know, I think he's going to be standing shoulder to shoulder with other like-minded souls, potentially a Liz Cheney and others who are going to stand a new ground inside the GOP. I'm looking forward to that fight. And I think people need to pay attention to Larry. I mean, the man is sitting here as we speak with over 70% approval among Democrats in this state. as he's winding down his second term. That is something to pay attention to. And he governed as a conservative. He didn't govern as some, you know, fly-by-night liberal Republican, as some would like to, you know, characterize him. He applied solid conservative principles around some of the fiscal policies, his approach to COVID. And I think it'll be something for the country to take a look at.
So, Michael Steele, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. I appreciate it very much.
I've always been a fan of yours, and going back, way back in the day, listening to and reading your words. And so I appreciate any time I get to hang with you, man.
And we managed to get through this entire podcast without talking about the need for day drinking.
I know, right? I wasn't sharing with you what was on my desk, but...
Okay. All right. So we almost got through the entire podcast without talking about that. Thanks for joining me. We'll have you back soon. And thank you all for listening to today's Bulwark Podcast. I'm Charlie Sykes. We'll be back tomorrow, and we'll do this all over again.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.